Think of all the little girls who could have been saved if our government had acted on that information in 1996. Hundreds of little girls could have been saved from getting molested if our government had acted on that information.
Hi, I'm John Kiriakou, and welcome back to Deep Focus. We're in the midst of a breaking story related to the Epstein documents. A couple of weeks ago, Congress passed a law. There was some drama around the law because it seems like the Republican leadership in the House didn't want to address the situation. There was a discharge petition. Democrats jumped on it, et cetera, et cetera. The administration was forced then, once the president signed the thing into law, to release all of the Jeffrey Epstein documents. Now, we know we're probably not going to see all of the Jeffrey Epstein documents. We probably are going to see redacted versions of some, or most, or many, or some other descriptive word of the Epstein documents. But they're being released in tranches right now. In fact, just minutes before we started this interview, there was another release of several thousand pages of documents. You can go on to justice.gov and search them and read them for yourself. They may not make a whole lot of sense if you don't have a deep understanding of the background to this case. I actually don't have the deepest understanding, but our guest sure does. Nick Bryant has been following this case from the very, very beginning. He's an investigative journalist and the author of several books. I think one of the most important of which was the Franklin scandal. The story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. Nick, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, John.
Glad to have you back. Very glad to have you back, because this is a serious story. It's breaking news. After the first tranche of documents was released a couple of days ago, people weren't happy because they expected so much more. In addition to a couple of screw-ups, one of which was that on the redacted documents, if you highlight the redactions, cut them, and then paste them into a new document, they unredact themselves. And you can read what was redacted. Well, what was redacted was the names of the victims. And so now the names of the victims are all out there, whether the victims authorized them to be or not. And we have that to deal with now on top of the actual information that's being released. So first, if you don't mind starting us off with your thoughts on the way things are going, and your thoughts about what it is that's new that we're learning about Jeffrey Epstein and what he did.
The Trump administration is actually breaking the law at this point. On Friday, they were supposed to have documents in full, and the only redactions would be redactions that are related to national security, which I still have a hard time comprehending what a bunch of child molesters have to do with national security. But that aside, there should have been much more information released. And at this point, they're saying, the Trump administration is saying that 5% have been released. But there was 200 people in the Department of Justice that were working on this for a month. You would think that there would be more than 4,000 documents that would be released. And again, you talked about victims being, their names being out there. I mean, there were victims, their names were being out there without the redactions. So, and of course, all the perpetrators are redacted. It really, it's not to the spirit or the letter of the law. The Epstein Victims Epstein Files Transparency Act was very definitive about what the Trump administration was supposed to deliver last Friday, and it has not. And I think that it's just going to be a slow drip. And Donald Trump is actually, this morning, he was attacking Thomas Massie. He was saying that Bill Clinton was a good guy and he hated to release all these pictures of Bill Clinton, and that Thomas Massie was a scumbag. Thomas Massie is simply a guy that wants to make sure that child molesters don't get away with molesting children with impunity. I mean, that's basically what he wants. And I think that the vast majority of American the vast majority of Americans agree with that, but yet our president doesn't seem to feel that that is baseline decency.
I have to say, too, I was struck by this letter that Epstein wrote to Larry Nassar, Dr. Larry Nassar, who was convicted of dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of counts of child molestation and sexual abuse. He was the doctor for the women's gymnastics team, the U.S. Olympic team. And he says, you know, by the time you receive this, I will have gone home by now. And then he just goes on to blame everything on Donald Trump, of all things. What do you make of that? Or maybe even more importantly, what should the country make of that?
Epstein obviously had a lot of antipathy towards Donald Trump. And those emails were, I mean, Epstein is calling Trump the worst scumbag he's ever met, which, you know, I mean, Epstein was very far from a paragon of morality. Actually, I think he was a psychopath. So I think that is the kettle calling the pot black when Jeffrey Epstein is accusing Donald Trump of being a scumbag? And those emails also show, now Donald Trump says that he severed his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein in 2003, 2004. And those emails show that their friendship continued. And I think that Trump has a lot to ask for. You know, what he's done is kept this covered up, and now he's breaking the law in furtherance of the cover-up. So Donald Trump has a lot to explain for himself.
I just don't understand, Nick. I don't understand what goes into a decision to violate a law that he championed, right? He campaigned on the idea of releasing all of the Epstein documents. And so what's the delay? If you know, if you are confident that you have done nothing wrong, and we already know that, you know, Bill Gates is implicated in these documents, and Bill Clinton and Prince Andrew and a whole host of other people, Noam Chomsky, a whole bunch of people. If you're confident that you're not, I just don't see any reason to not release everything. Am I missing something? Am I being naive, or is Donald Trump likely implicated in these documents?
Well, the thing about Jeffrey Epstein is he was a pedophilic pimp, amongst other things. I mean, he was a multi-talented guy. He was a pedophilic pimp. He was a money launderer. And actually, he was fairly astute at being a war profiteer, too, which we can get into in a little bit. But with what Trump did everything he possibly could to put the kibosh on that discharge petition. Everything. I mean, and Mike Johnson adjourned Congress early, and he wouldn't swear in the representative from Arizona that would have given the discharge petition 218 votes, which would have ultimately made the House vote on it, and then it would have been sent to John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, and he could have quashed it right there. And he sounded very cynical towards it, but then all of a sudden, I think that the administration realized that that discharge petition had become a tsunami.
Yeah.
And 89% of the American public wanted, according to the CBS poll, 89% of the American public wanted to see transparency. So there was a tremendous amount of pressure on Trump, and then he signed the Epstein Biles Transparency Act, which gave the Department of Justice 30 days. And it's been very obvious to anybody that's really following this story that that administration didn't take it very seriously, or they're doing everything they can. I mean, but the Trump administration has done everything it can to delay and cover up. So obviously if Donald Trump doesn't have something to hide, there are some very powerful people that are putting pressure on him to make sure that it's covered up, or maybe an intelligence agency. That's always right. Entirely possible to him.
Right. I'm going to get to that too. First, I want to read you a couple of sentences from a piece at ABC News that was released about an hour ago. It says a group of alleged victims of Jeffrey Epstein accused the Department of Justice of missteps, including violations of the law in its partial release of files related to the disgraced financier's abuse of young women and girls. The DOJ faced a Friday deadline imposed by Congress to release a massive cache of records gathered during government investigations into the sex offender. Justice officials released thousands of files ranging from investigative documents to grand jury testimony to snapshots taken by Epstein and his friends, but said that it would fail to fully release all the files by the deadline. Okay, we've seen a lot of reporting already just in the last 48 hours focused on these snapshots. We've all now seen the gross picture of Bill Clinton in a hot tub and Prince Andrew laying across, you know, the laps of five young women. What about things like grand jury testimony, which is normally off limits to absolutely everybody? What about these investigative files? Are we learning anything new about this case?
There's one thing that we have learned that has been, I think, exceedingly auspicious is Maria Farmer said that she went to the FBI in 1996 and reported Jeffrey Epstein. And there was a New York police report that I eventually found where she did go to the New York NYPD and made a report, but the report said that Epstein was threatening to burn one of her paintings. It didn't talk about anything else that Epstein was up to. But the FBI report from 1996 shows that she did talk to them about Epstein had taken pictures of Maria, and Maria had taken those pictures of her sisters because she's an artist and she wanted to give artistic renditions of her younger sisters. And Epstein took them and then threatened to burn her house down and was very malicious. And according to the FBI, right on the header of the investigation is child pornography. So Epstein was reported for child pornography in 1996, or the FBI certainly knew about it, because we know that the Bush administration started the cover-up with the Sweetheart Deal, and then it went through Obama, Biden, Trump, and then Trump again. But now we know that the Clinton FBI Department of Justice was aware of Epstein. And of course, at that time, Jeffrey Epstein was bringing young women, not girls, but young women into the White House for Bill Clinton. We know that. So I think that the Jeffrey Epstein cover-up was started at the federal level from probably 1996. That's, I think, been the most revelatory of the documents that have come out, is that the FBI could have put the kibosh, and the Department of Justice could have put the kibosh on Jeffrey Epstein in 1996. Now, think of all the little girls who could have been saved if our government had acted on that information in 1996. Hundreds of little girls could have been saved from getting molested if our government had acted on that information.
I wanted to ask you, too, about specifically about the grand jury minutes. Two different federal judges ordered that the grand jury minutes be released. That's very unusual. Grand juries are usually completely secret. The sessions are secret. The findings are secret. But two different federal judges ordered that they be released. There was a tranche of 119 pages in this most recent release. They were all grand jury minutes, and every single word was blacked out. Why do you think that is? We would have expected, of course, the names of the victims, maybe the names of the alleged perpetrators to be blacked out, but every single word. Why? Why is that?
obviously, the Department of Justice didn't really want us to know what went on in that grand jury. There was a very corrupt state grand jury that found that Jeffrey Epstein hadn't molested a single child. It was the special prosecutor was Lana Belovic, and actually Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, released the transcripts of that grand jury. And I've dissected it. It's on the web. The director of an organization, it's called Epstein Justice, and your audience can go to our website and look at the video I made on that grand jury, where I basically show how corrupted that grand jury is, to the point where at that point, the Palm Beach Police Department were aware of, I think, at least 20 victims, and they had the statements of five, and only two of those victims were called to testify, and they were skewered by Lana Belovic, and actually one of them was called a prostitute.
Oh my God.
She was started getting molested by Jeffrey Epstein when she was 16 and she was now 18. And the other one had been molested by Jeffrey Epstein when she was 14 and now she was 16. So they were pretty easy for her to just completely malign, which was very unfortunate. But according to all the sources, really, The feds initially had a 50 or 60 count indictment against Jeffrey Epstein.
I didn't know that.
And that's what's been covered up big time. There is documents about that investigation, but they're heavily redacted too. So there's so much that, I mean, that investigation by the FBI, it could have easily just redacted the victims' names, but everything was redacted. I don't know why the Department of Justice redacted the entire grand jury, but that goes against the law. As I said earlier, the Trump administration is breaking a law that Donald Trump signed, a law that every senator voted for, a law that 434 representatives voted for. So in Congress, there was one individual that abstained from voting yes for that law, and Donald Trump signed it into law. And now the administration is completely reneging on. And Pam Bondi has completely charged her credibility, and so is Cash Patel. They stood before the Senate and House and said that not a single child had been trafficked. And we obviously know better. We knew better before this transfer of documents was, we knew this years ago, that Jeffrey Epstein was trafficking underage girls. And for them to come out, it shows you how our government has really descended into something that's horrific. Because with sexual abuse survivors, and I've been researching and writing about child sexual abuse for 22, 23 years, and the best thing that you can say to a survivor is, "I believe you." The worst thing that you can say to a survivor or a victim is, "I don't believe you." And that's what the Trump administration has been saying to all these victims. And they're conceding that it's, initially they said 1,000, now they're saying 1,200. So all those girls were, when Cash Patel and Pam Bondi were before the Senate and the House saying that no one was trafficked, I mean, basically our two top law enforcement officers in the country were saying to all those girls, "We don't believe you."
Right. Nick, did you expect to see any information released? And not all the information has been released, we should point out. But did you expect to see by now some information that might help to explain why it was that Epstein got the sweetheart deal that he did way back in 2006?
All that has either been redacted or it hasn't been released, because there was a very intense investigation into Epstein. And that, somewhere along the line, just completely got quashed. And the investigative documents from the FBI that we have, as I said earlier, have been redacted. So it's obvious to me that what's going on now is a cover-up. It's a cover-up. And if Donald Trump isn't protecting himself, he's protecting other entities and other people.
And that is just, that's just inexplicable to me, because this is one of those, like, no way to lose situations, provided that you're clean in the first place. But if you're clean in the first place and everybody wants this information released, besides the fact that your base, your political base, has this as one of its top issues, right? To the point where he had to campaign on the issue. If elected, I will release all of the Epstein documents. And then you're in a position to release the documents. Your base forces Congress's hand. They give you 30 days to do it. And then you do it in fits and starts. You redact a whole lot of stuff. You don't really add any information to the body of evidence that's already out there. I just don't see what the end game is. Help me understand the politics of this. What is he trying to accomplish?
The only thing I can think of is delay, delay, delay. But he's going to be president for another 3 years. I mean, theoretically anyway. So there's only going to be so much he can delay. And like I said, according to the Department of Justice, only 4 to 5% of those documents have been released. And as I also said earlier, there were 200 lawyers at the Department of Justice vetting those documents. How you had 200 lawyers and there was 4,000 pages of new documents that were released and 200 lawyers had a month to vet, you would think that they would have accomplished more. Maybe they just needed higher potency coffee or something, but at this point, it's very much a cover up, and actually, it's breaking the law too. We saw something like this in the Nixon administration, and I think what is going on is obstruction of justice, and that's ultimately what got Nixon impeached, was obstruction of justice.
Well, you know what they say: it's never the crime that does politicians in; it's the cover up of the crime. That's what did in Nixon and everybody around him. It was the cover up.
And actually, Nixon didn't even know that the crime had been committed. A leopard doesn't change his spots. He just saw a problem and just saw it had to be covered up, even though he didn't know the genesis of it. With Donald Trump, it's a little bit different, because this has played out in front of our entire country. The way that Donald Trump he was calling it a hoax, and it's just been pretty, pretty, as I said, horrific that our government has descended to what it's descended to. I mean, child sexual abuse is the most heinous of crimes, the most heinous of crimes. And the way our government is so blatantly involved in covering it up and obstruction, it's sickening.
I'll tell you, I've said on other podcasts over the years that fully one third of the inmates in the prison where I served 23 months after I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program, fully 35% of them were convicted pedophiles. They were sort of divided between what we called clickers, those who just looked at pictures of children, and touchers, people who had actually traveled cross state lines to molest children. The sentences that these guys had were draconian, and rightfully so. We're talking about people in a low security prison. They can't go to minimum because they'll abscond, but they can't go to a medium or a maximum because they'll get killed there, right? People will beat them to death. So they're all in low security prisons. Well, if it's pro forma to sentence a convicted pedophile to 20, 25, 30, I knew one who was in for 60 years. I just simply don't understand why we're looking at Jeffrey Epstein in a different way, even after death. I just don't understand why the effort to maybe not protect his legacy, but to be careful not to try to soil his legacy any more than he had already soiled it. Can you help me understand this? I don't get why the necessity for this protection.
I don't think it's about protecting Jeffrey Epstein at this point. I think it's about protecting a way of life, a political system. It's protecting a political system, and it's protecting some powerful people that are part of that system. That's what the protection is about now. And with or without Jeffrey Epstein, it was very obvious. And we saw this in 1996. We saw it again in 2008 with the feds. It's very obvious that Jeffrey Epstein was going to be protected, but it was the reason why Jeffrey Epstein was going to be protected is because what he was plugged into.
I'm going to take a very short break for a word from our sponsors, who we're very grateful to have, by the way. Before we get into this next half of our conversation with Nick Bryan about Jeffrey Epstein and the documents, and while you're distracted by these Epstein headlines, much like I am, a real transformation is underway. That's the rise of the digital dollar. 134 countries, including the United States, are developing central bank digital currencies. That means your transactions can be tracked, your spending can be controlled, your savings might be vulnerable to instant freezing. This is what the current public policy is moving toward. Bureaucrats and those suspicious former colleagues of mine in our nation's three-letter agencies would love nothing more than to have more information about you, about your spending, and about your habits. The government calls it innovation, but let's call it what it really is. It's financial surveillance. Well, American Alternative Assets has put together a free guide that shows you how to protect your retirement with physical gold. It's called The Digital Dollar Trap, and it's something that every freedom-minded American should be reading. Inside the free guide, you'll discover how to protect yourself from government overreach with physical assets like gold and silver. So go to johnlovesgold.com right now to get this completely free guide. That's johnlovesgold.com, because if the dollar is going digital, you're going to need something real. Nick, I want to turn, if we could, to Ghislaine Maxwell. This bothers me. This whole situation with Ghislaine Maxwell bothers me very, very much. She's a convicted pedophile, number one. Let's just call a spade here. She wasn't Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend. It was associated, blah, 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 blah. She's a convicted pedophile. And she has 20-something years in prison to show for it. But I'll tell you what bothers me. Number one, she was brought from her prison to Washington, D.C. to testify before a grand jury and to have a conversation with investigators. Great. But then just a few days later, she was transferred from a low security prison where all the pedophiles are kept to a minimum security work camp. That just doesn't happen. If you're a pedophile, you go to the actual prison. She went to the minimum security work camp where she's able to walk the beach and pick up trash and do whatever it is that, you know, minimum security people do. They're barely under guard as it is. Then she applied for some sort of relief. We're not 100% sure. We don't know if it's either a pardon or a commutation, both of which would allow her just to go straight home and live happily ever after. Why are we even having this conversation, do you think? Do you think it's possible that she could give the Justice Department enough new information to warrant a commutation or a pardon? Is this something that Donald Trump is actually considering, do you think? Where do you see this going?
I don't know. The information that she gave Todd Blanche, I mean, the crux of it was Donald Trump wasn't involved with Jeffrey Epstein. And that's what enabled her to go to this minimum security prison in Texas and work on her yoga asanas. So that's was the upshot, is she exonerated Donald Trump. And I really hope that Donald Trump does not give her a pardon. She appealed her case on the fact that all of Epstein's co-conspirators have been given immunity by the Southern District of Florida in 2007-2008. And which is, I have that document. It's kind of a unbelievably mind-boggling document. And because she was given immunity in the Southern District, she felt like she was given immunity, categorical immunity, in all districts. And that often happens with mafia turncoats. They're given immunity in one district, and that applies to all districts. So her attorneys had a fairly solid foundation to argue for her, because the Southern District of New York came after her after she had been given immunity by the Southern District of Florida. But the Supreme Court opted not to hear her case. Her case was appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court opted not to appeal her case, or opted not to hear her case. So according to our laws and our appellate mechanisms, she is not entitled to get any kind of a break at this point. I mean, it's been argued up to the Supreme Court. So if Donald Trump has made some kind of underhanded deal with her, some kind of sub rosa deal with her, that would just be really, really,
really bad.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And think about all the victims of Ghislaine Maxwell that are out there. I've talked to some of them, and they're still very much frightened of Ghislaine Maxwell.
Well, we know the American Psychological Association and the American Psychiatric Association are crystal clear over the fact that pedophiles cannot be reformed. It's not possible. Their brains can't be cured of pedophilia. So society needs to be protected from them. That's why we have such long sentences for these crimes. And it doesn't surprise me one bit that these women are afraid of Ghislaine Maxwell. She's a monster, and society needs to be protected from her. So I think that they've got something to say that the country should listen to, because if she were to be freed, whether through commutation or pardon, I would fear for my children, literally.
And it would be such an egregious violation against all the victims that she molested and trafficked over there, because if you look at the documentation, she was actually, I think, more vicious than Jeffrey Epstein. Human traffickers, and that's, the media has let down these Epstein victims in multiple ways, but one of the major ways is the media has not really delineated just how vicious these people are. And there's been a couple of books that have been written by Epstein survivors. One was called, one was by Sarah Ransom, and the other one is by Virginia Giuffre, Nobody's Girl, which just came out. And those books really show what psychopaths Maxwell and Epstein were. I mean, they are psychopaths. And I would just be stunned if she got pardoned or a commutation. For her to be in that prison in Texas now is an incredible violation of American jurisprudence. She should not be allowed to be in that Texas prison. And actually, when she was put in the first prison in Florida, they bumped her up to dormitory living very quickly. And usually inmates that are bumped up to dormitory living, they've been there for a while, and they've been exemplary prisoners, and they're coming close to their release date. But she was bumped up to dormitory living very, very quickly, which is another miscarriage of justice in the Ghislaine Maxwell story.
Yeah, I just don't I just don't understand it at all. You know, we talk about psychological therapy for people with this kind of predilection. And we talk about, on the other side, community incarceration, where after they serve their sentences, you keep them on the grounds of the prison in a mobile home where they're semi-free. They're not in the prison. There's no count time. You know, they can't be punished additionally, but they're not allowed outside the gates, outside the walls. And here, you're right. The idea that she was bumped up to a dorm, which is a reward that you get, right? You leave an actual cell, you go into a dorm. The dorm has TVs all around. You're free to come and go. You get that as a reward. And the fact that she got it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I wrote a book called The Franklin Scandal, and there were two primary pimps that were involved. Actually, Epstein in many ways is a carbon copy of The Franklin Scandal. And there was one pimp that was kind of analogous to Epstein. He had all the connections, and he was a power broker. He lived in D.C., had a mansion, he was a CIA asset. All his rooms were wired for audiovisual blackmail. A lot of the same attributes that Epstein has. And he committed suicide. And I do believe that he committed suicide. On the internet, it says that he was suicided.
No,
I believe. But I think that he was given, you know, an offer he couldn't refuse. There was a Vito Corleone character that came up to him and said, either you kill yourself or we'll kill you. So I think that is what happened in that situation. Now, the other guy, Lawrence King, he kept his mouth shut. He saw what happened to Craig Spence, and he kept his mouth shut, and he did 10 years. Wasn't indicted on a single count of child abuse, was indicted on multiple counts of financial malfeasance. And he had a no-show job waiting for him in Alexandria, Virginia, at a BMW dealership. So I think that was the kind of deal that was made with Ghislaine Maxwell. You saw what happened to Epstein. You keep your mouth shut. We'll take care of you. And then when you get out, we'll take care of you. We'll continue to take care of you. But I'm sure that Jeffrey Epstein and Maxwell, they socked away a lot of money. I've got no doubts about that to take care of Maxwell.
I think you're right, actually. I think you're right. There's a lot of money that we're talking about here. Hundreds of millions of dollars, reportedly. And I think that was probably the deal. The deal was, look, you're going to have to do some time. We'll work hard to try to make it as easy a sentence as possible. And then when you get out, okay, you can just live in obscurity, but you have plenty of money. You can come and go as you please and do what you want and, you know, whatever. And it didn't really work out that way. He thought he got away with it in 2006, 2007. And for a while he did, but he couldn't stop himself. Because remember, as the APAs have told us, you can't cure this. And so it got the better of him. I agree with you, though.
I think that there was a...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I believe he committed suicide. Only because, having done prison time myself, I can tell you that most of the prison guards have their heads up their asses, excuse my language, but they just do. They're asleep on the job, or they're in the guard booth looking at porn, or playing solitaire, or talking to their girlfriends. These are washouts from the local police academy or from the military who couldn't cut it anywhere else. Literally, the only qualifications you need to be a prison guard, or you have to be working on a GED, or already have a GED or high school diploma. And no felony convictions. That's it. And so you're not getting the cream of the crop, the best that society has to offer. So when these guys are supposed to walk around every 8 minutes or every 15 minutes, depending on the level of security that you're in, and they only do it once every hour or once every 2 hours because they're sound asleep in that guard booth, well, that's what you get. You get what you pay for. Similarly, the reports that the cameras weren't working. The cameras never work anywhere. In all the prisons, the cameras are down half the time. It's because that's just the way it is, and nobody really cares to make sure that they are working, or that they're upgraded, or they're hooked up properly, or they're, you know, they're the latest that are available. people just don't care. And so I do believe he committed suicide. I believe that it was unfortunate for a whole bunch of reasons, but I believe it was a suicide.
Well, you talk about Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, his addiction was off the charts. He had to have three girls a day, or that's what he was. I mean, he had a whole machine that was built by Maxwell, and those women that worked for him that recruited girls, I mean, they kept pumping girls out to him. And as I said, three times a day, that was his goal, three times a day. But I think not only was his addiction getting extreme, but there was also a lot of media on him. And I think that that's the other variable. Miami Herald had published that series, and there were a number of civil lawsuits being launched at him. So I believe that Jeffrey Epstein was a blackmailer, and you lose your efficacy as a blackmailer if everybody knows you're a blackmailer. And I think that that's what happened with Craig Spence too, is he started to get too much media on him. And I think that ultimately was the death knell for Jeffrey Epstein, is the media.
Nick, the administration, as we mentioned a little while ago, has already said they're not going to be able to make the 30-day limit that they have to release these documents. But they do say that they're committed to releasing everything that they're supposed to release, with redactions, obviously. Do you expect to see anything that's truly revelatory? Do you expect for there to be blockbuster news that comes out of these subsequent releases?
The Trump administration has let us down every step of the way. I'm not expecting a leopard to change its spots at this point. That document that came out about 1996, though, that was somewhat revelatory. I'm glad that that document came out, because there's litigation going on now between Epstein victims and the FBI. And that's kind of a smoking gun, that the FBI really just let it slide when it actually filled out there was a form, it wasn't a 302, but it was an actual investigative form about a child pornography investigation. So that was revelatory. There's a lot of other documents that are coming up, but the documents that we really need, the documents that are important, is everything that went into that 50 or 60 count indictment in Florida by the feds. Those documents are very important, and we haven't got any meaningful information from those documents.
I say this all the time, but in business school, they teach you that hope is not a strategy. Do we have anything more than just hope that DOJ does the right thing and releases everything, to the point where maybe people who have committed very serious crimes against children can be prosecuted for those crimes? Or are we past that already?
Well, I'm the director of Epstein Justice, and what we want is an independent congressional commission. And that would not require any kind of executive oversight. And independent congressional commissions often use citizens that are not affiliated with the government to investigate and be part of it. If this was just going to go to a subcommittee, it would die. But I think an independent congressional commission is the way to go. But ultimately, we don't even need very many documents. A lot of the documents that we need are out there. And we know who the procurers are. We know who the procurers are, and we know who a lot of the perps are. And we've got at least 1,200 victims. If the Department of Justice wanted to get indictments in this, it would be a simple RICO case.
Right.
They would go to the procurers. Those procurers are guilty of multiple counts of child trafficking, which is a heavy sentence in the federal system. It's 15 to life. And you can nail them with 10 counts of child trafficking, because they're guilty of a lot more than 10. If you can go light and go five counts, they would start rolling over on the perps. You've got a lot of witnesses that were molested. So between the procurers and the documents that we have and the witnesses, if our government had a will to start putting people in prison, we could have done it a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I'm not despondent at this point. When people said to me, yeah, it's the day's approaching and Trump administration, I wasn't very excited about it. I knew that this was going to happen. I've been following this case too long. And Donald Trump's behavior in this case has just been so bizarre. I mean, he's called it a hoax even. So I wasn't expecting, actually, this is exactly what I was expecting. But we, as Americans, we have to put pressure on our government and we have to make our legislators do the right thing. And our legislators will do the right thing if there's enough fear. And it's up to us as Americans. We can either, if you cover up a crime, you're aiding and abetting that crime. So as Americans, we can coexist with a government that aids and abets child trafficking, child sexual trafficking. Or we can make sure our government doesn't do that. And it's really, I think it's ultimately going to be up to us, the body politic, to make sure that our government doesn't aid and abet child trafficking. And it's really unfortunate that the government has descended to such depths that not only to be part of it, but to cover it up, but that's the way it is. And but as Americans, we have to flesh our system out. Americans know that something is seriously wrong with their political system. And they've known it for quite a bit. And I think that's why Donald Trump became president. There was a real populist demand for someone who wasn't going to be politics as usual. Americans are very tired of politics as usual. And what we see in Trump is what we've seen previously from other administrations, certainly with regards to Epstein.
Nick, tell us what you're writing these days and where people can go to learn more about the work that you're doing.
I am the director of Epstein Justice, as I said earlier, and I'm working very, very hard to advance Epstein Justice. And what we're doing is you can go to our website, epsteinjustice.com. We're having monthly webinars, and then we're organizing people by state via Facebook. And we're going to keep growing and growing. It's tough. I mean, we're all volunteers. But as we keep growing, we need resources. But a lot of people have been very generous with their time, and I'm very happy at this point, the way that we're going to grow. I know that we're going to pick up more momentum as more Americans get disillusioned by what the Trump administration is doing. And actually, in all fairness to Donald Trump, I mean, Joseph Biden didn't do anything about it. Barack Obama didn't do anything about it. And Bush, too, was the one that really started the cover-up. Although you can make an argument for Clinton because of the 1996 FBI reports.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. And thanks for trying to shed a light on all these different issues and on the documents themselves. I suspect we have a long way to go before we really have answers to this very difficult and really horrible case. Thanks for helping us.
No problem. And I'm sure you and I will be talking about this again.
I suspect we will probably sooner rather than later. Yeah, I think you're right. Thanks for being with us.
Take care, John.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for joining us for another episode of Deep Focus. We can only do this because of you. It's because you have liked, you have shared, you have commented, you have subscribed. That's really important to us. And please, please keep it up. Please especially subscribe and help us get the word out to many, many more people. Thanks for being with us. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time on Deep Focus. Bye-bye.